Chapter 2. Our horribly complicated and idiotic plan, and yes, I am using ironic quotes around the word plan, started by draining power from the dropships, all of our dropships, every single one. Then, when every system aboard those dropships was almost completely dead, Skippy overpressurized the docking bays with nitrogen, released the docking clamps, and blew the outer doors open one at a time. The inert dropships got sucked out into space, tumbling out of control away from the Flying Dutchman. Why, you might ask, were we not using the dropships as shelters while we had to be away from the ship? Because the power cells of the dropships took a long time to really, truly, completely drain, and by the time the power cells were totally dead and truly purged of the energy virus, any humans inside would have frozen solid before the energy virus was safely gone. Also, as the dropship power cells were draining, the energy virus would be looking for a new host, so it would be very bad for humans to be aboard a dropship at that time. Humans could not be aboard dropships, and we could not be aboard the ship. For at least 86 hours, we needed to be away from the ship because the much larger power cells and capacitors of the ship took a very long time to drain completely. That left spacesuits for humans to survive in while Skippy purged the energy virus from the ship and dropships. Easy, right? We get into spacesuits, float away from the Flying Dutchman, and Skippy recovers us after the ship is rebooted. No, not so easy. First, the power cells of the spacesuits also had to be fully drained before we got into them. Drained like completely super-duper dead. The power cells of our Krystang-powered armor suits were comparatively small, so Skippy was able to purge them within a couple hours before we got into the suits aboard the Dutchman, eliminating the risk of the dying energy virus trying to infect a person inside the suit. How were we supposed to survive in spacesuits that had no power at all? That was where our way-too-risky plan started to get really complicated. After the dropships were a safe distance away from the ship, we all got into suits, wearing portable breathing masks hooked up to oxygen bottles attached to the suit backpack. The suit helmets weren't designed for users to wear a mask, so it was a tight fit, and my mask kept scratching my chin and the bridge of my nose. Once we had our dead suits buttoned up and verified everyone had oxygen flowing into their masks properly, we tethered ourselves together in groups of 10 people, floating above the floor of a docking bay. Skippy depressurized the bay, opened the outer doors, and I pressed a button on a Z-phone to activate a pre-programmed maneuver, then tossed the Z-phone away because its power cell was still active. A few seconds after I sent the command to the ship's navigation system, the backup thrusters fired, moving the ship sideways. It seemed like we were moving, but with the entire crew floating tethered together, we stayed in one place while the ship slowly backed away from us. The backup thrusters used pressurized gas and were not powerful, which was good, because we didn't want any sudden movements in case something went wrong. Tethered to 9 other people, I tried to relax and not move to prevent us from bouncing off the doorframe on our way out. With 10 people loosely tied together, we inevitably jostled around and began drifting toward the ceiling of the docking bay, but we were still well clear when the ship slid out beneath us and we were floating freely in interstellar space. All I could hear was my own breathing, the hiss of oxygen flowing into my mask, and blood pulsing in my ears. With the suit completely drained of power, I couldn't speak with anyone over the comm system. To communicate, we each had something like a small whiteboard strapped to one forearm and 3 high-tech fluorescent magic markers that worked reasonably well in space. If we needed to, we could write messages on our whiteboards and hold them up for others to see through the transparent visors of our helmets. In the utter darkness of interstellar space, the only light was coming from a single point on the Dutchman, pointed toward us. Strapped to 9 other people, I forced myself to remain calm to conserve oxygen and watched the Dutchman slowly fading behind me. In interstellar space, the bulk of the ship was a dark void in the dark star field, except for the one light that Skippy kept pointed in our direction. With that light, I could see other groups of people tied together, each group tumbling slowly out of sync with the other groups. There was no point trying to stabilize the tumbling, because even if we could synchronize the actions of 10 people using hand signals, as soon as a group got stable, little motions would get the group tumbling again. For 40 long, silent, lonely, and terrifying minutes, we drifted in empty space. After we had drifted half a kilometer from the ship, or technically after the ship had drifted half a kilometer from us, the pre-programmed instruction fired the ship's backup thrusters hard, using up all the stored gas canisters. We needed to be safely far from the ship when Skippy began draining all power from every energy storage system, and we couldn't wait long, so the ship had to scoot away from us as fast as possible. The only way I knew how much time had passed was by Skippy blinking the spotlight after each 5-minute period had passed. When the spotlight blinked 6 times, I knew we had been floating inside dead spacesuits for 30 minutes, and I was already getting distinctly chilly. Part of me being cold was psychological. The Kristang suits were good at retaining heat, and the hard vacuum of interstellar space was an excellent insulator. Skippy had assured us we would not be in danger of hypothermia for nearly an hour, but at the 30-minute mark, I could feel my toes growing stiff and cold, and I could only move them a little inside the boots. Even 3 pairs of U.S. Army cold-weather socks were not helping my toes be happy. Finally, the spotlight blinked 8 times to signal 40 minutes had passed, then shined solidly for 10 seconds, in case any of us were not paying attention. That was the signal we were now a safe distance from the Flying Dutchman, where the energy virus could not project itself across the gap. Probably could not project across the gap, according to Skippy, he was guessing, and the best he could give me was a solid shmaybe about it. His level of confidence didn't matter, because we couldn't wait much longer. I was shivering inside the suit, and our oxygen supply was only going to stretch another 30 minutes. We needed to get started on the next phase of our science team's complicated, impractical plan. How, you may ask, were we supposed to restore power to our suits when we could not take any type of energy storage device out into space with us? I asked Friedlander the same question, and when he explained how our suits were going to power up, I nearly choked. Using the few bots Skippy was able to get working, the beer can had made a super-duper high-tech device that blew my primitive caveman mind when I saw it. A spring. Yes, a tightly wound coil of some flexible composite material attached to an electric motor. Skippy's little helper elf bots had wound the springs for us before the devices were attached to our suits. All we had to do was reach behind to the bottom of our packs and put a gloved finger through a ring to pull out a locking pin. I got it on the first try, without the fumbling around that happened when I practiced the maneuver aboard the ship. With the locking pin spinning away into deep space, I pulled a lever and felt my backpack shake as the coiled spring unwound. The suit stopped shaking, but still there were no comforting status lights showing in my helmet visor. Skippy had warned me the power cells needed to reach a minimum charge before the suit's systems would restart. "Hey, Joe? Hey, can you hear me?" He made a booming sound like a finger tapping a microphone. "Is this thing on?" Damn it, stupid monkey probably broke the spring. "Why did I trust—" "I'm here, Skippy," I replied, speaking slowly because my teeth were chattering from the cold.
"Joe!
Man, it is good to hear your voice. Okay, getting a status message from your suit? Looks like you have within 1% of the expected charge level. Pretty good, huh? I cobbled those springs together out of spare parts. Wasn't sure they would work. You weren't sure they would work? Yet you sent us out into the great beyond anyway? In my defense, I wasn't sure all of them would work. I was confident most of them would. So far, it looked like only one spring has failed, and that still provided 70% of the output I expected. Are all the suits in my group powered up? From my position on the tether, I could only see into one other person's faceplate. Yes, Joe, the person with the bad spring is in Major Desai's group. She is helping that person get powered up manually. Speaking of which... Yeah, I'm on it. While I reached into the sort of fanny pack on the front of my suit, I called out to the other 9 people in my group, talking briefly with each of them to assure myself that they had come through the ordeal without too much trauma. Or that they had come through the first part of our ordeal, because the really traumatic part for me would come later. Next, I checked in with the other group leaders while carefully extracting the handle from my fanny pack and connecting it to the gear on my belt. My grandfather would have described the next part as a cockamamie scheme. He was fond of colorful, old-fashioned expressions like that. The pre-wound spring only provided enough power to get the suits restarted and allow comms and oxygen recycling to be restored. To keep those basic systems running and to get the heater units going, we needed more energy. We did not have extra coiled springs, but fortunately we did have a source of power. human muscles. After I fitted the handle to the gear, I extended the handle and began slowly pulling it toward me. When the handle touched my chest, the gear slipped into another position, so I pushed it outward, then pulled it back toward me. Yes, the science team's amazing and super practical plan was for us to provide our own source of electricity by turning a crank. It was awkward, and the motion caused me to rotate in space, but I could see the power level in the lower left corner of my visor inching upward with painful slowness. It was like doing bench presses or push-ups, followed by pull-ups or a rowing motion. The gear had a dial so you could adjust the effort required. The more effort you put into it, the faster the power cells charged. Once I was sure the suit's oxygen recycler was working correctly, I manually shut off the oxygen mask, although there was no way for me to remove the awkward thing. Pull the handle, push it outward, and pull it again. We kept each other's spirits up by chatting, and I frequently checked in with Skippy. Cranking up our own power supplies was boring and made my forearms ache, but we had nothing else to do, nor did we have a choice, so we kept at it. 2 hours after we started, I heard a voice with a French accent announce, "Achevé! Complete! I am finished," the paratrooper added in English. "Shit! Just missed it," a ranger called out, having reached the target power cell charge level a fraction of a second too late. "All right, people, it's not a competition," I called out, though with good cheer. "Colonel Bishop," Major Smythe advised me on a private channel, "these are elite special operations troops. Everything is a competition." "I know that, Major. Just as I know the troops expect the old man to keep them focused." The old man. Me. Even though I was younger than many of the Spec Ops team and all of the civilian scientists. On an open channel, I added, "Congratulations to the winner. A bottle of champagne will be awarded when we get back to the ship. Runner-up gets a six-pack of beer." "Merde," the Frenchman complained, not approving of the champagne Major Sims had selected for the journey. "Is it too late for me to switch?"
"Hey, forget about that, buddy," the ranger laughed. "I'm keeping that beer." "Ah, hell, I'll let you have one bottle."
Friendly competition is healthy, I told myself, with one eye on the power level of my own suit. At the fading rate I was adding power, it would be another 20 minutes before I could stop hauling back on that stupid handle. "How we doing, people?" I asked the other 9 people on my team. Everyone chimed in with fine or okay or some version of that. "Pool?" I asked my involuntary bodyguard who was behind me. "How you doing?" I asked her again because of the strain I heard in her voice when she had replied with a terse, squared away.
"Almost there. Almost. Done," she shouted in triumph.
"Seriously?" I looked at my power meter in dismay.
"Yes, sir."
She was slightly out of breath.
"How are you doing?"
I'm fine. I hope the embarrassment I felt at failing to finish before her wasn't reflected in my voice. Poole was a kick-ass ranger, so I shouldn't feel bad that she had beaten me. Yes, my male pride was bruised, but when a woman beats me at something, that means she earned it. She worked longer and harder than I did, plain and simple. Knowing Poole had finished the task of cranking her suit's power cells up to the recommended level made me more determined to finish the task as soon as possible. Poole is a ranger, and she is in excellent condition, but I have been in the gym with her, and I know I can bench press more than she can. How did she beat me? That's simple, I told myself. I had been taking breaks when the strain got too much for me. Poole had powered through the pain and kept going steadily. "Skippy," I called, my forearms cramping. The pain in my arms and hands, plus the droplets of sweat beating up on my forehead and wicking down into my eyelashes, made me pause, even though the power meter still stubbornly blinked that I had 3% more to go before I was at the recommended minimum level. "Is there something wrong with the gear I'm using? I've been working my ass off, and this meter is moving up slower and slower."
"Huh? No, come on, Joe, I was just screwing with you," he laughed. "Duh, you finished 3 minutes before Lieutenant Poole."
"What?" I screamed at him and was rewarded by the entire crew laughing uproariously at me. Crap, that asshole beer can had put our comms on an open channel.
"You son of a—" "Oh, boo freaking who, Joe," he chuckled. "Poor you.
I've been killing myself here."
"Look at the bright side, Joe. You now have a reserve of power, and all that work warmed you up so you don't need to run your suit heaters yet. You can thank me now." That was not a funny way to screw with me, Skippy, I fumed at the beer can.
Wrong, dude. It was freaking hilarious,
he giggled like a little girl.
Truthfully, it was originally just a fun way to screw with you, but when you kept going and going and never caught on to what I was doing, it became an experiment to see how gullible a dumb monkey you are. I kept checking back in to see if you had caught on to my totally obvious trick, but no. Every time I looked, little Joey the dumb monkey was mindlessly working away without using his brain at all. The answer to my experiment is, damn, you are a dimwit. Seriously, after a while I started feeling sorry for you. Not sorry enough to stop you, it was way too entertaining. Anywho, no harm done, and everyone got a good laugh to lift morale at a tension-filled time.
Crap, I could not argue with that asshole. On the open channel I could still hear people snickering at my expense.
I suppose no harm was done, I said with what I hoped came across as a good-natured tone, while inwardly I was fantasizing about dropping him into a black hole.
What's the status over there?
Ran into a couple minor glitches.
Minor? Nothing involving killer elder energy viruses could be minor.
Like what?
Oh, nothing worth writing home about. The energy virus now realizes what I'm doing, and with you and the dropships out of range, it is adapting and trying to infect me.
Holy shit, I gasped, remembering how an elder computer worm had nearly killed him.
Are you gonna be okay?
Sure, Joe. Let me assure you, I am not playing games with the virus. It's too dumb for me to bother with. I am straight up blocking it from accessing my matrix. The virus knows it has zero chance against me, so it's getting desperate.
You thought that computer worm had no chance to hurt you, and you were wrong about that, you little shithead. This virus is elder technology, like the worm.
Elder tech, yes, but not anything sophisticated like that devious little worm. Remember, this virus was designed only to keep track of ships the Guardians wrecked and to disable damaged ships if they attempted to power up. It is a very limited function system. Seriously, I am in no danger.
You saying that does not reassure me, Skippy, says the monkey who kept cranking that handle.
Duh.
Oh, shut up. Hell, I sighed. I can't do anything about it from here.
Are we still on schedule?
Close. I now estimate the ship will be safe after a purge of 91 hours.
That's 5 hours more than your original estimate.
5 hours more than my original guess, dum-dum. I told you, I've never done this before. Now I have data to work with, and I learned the virus is more persistent than I thought. The damn thing is rerouting circuits by itself to concentrate the remaining power in a few systems in an attempt to delay the inevitable time when it fades away completely.
Shit. That doesn't sound good.
It actually is good news. I suckered the virus into doing that, and it fell right into my trap. That virus is nearly as gullible as you are.
Joe, if this works, the remaining virus will be concentrated in one cluster of power cells, and I can kind of use my power source to burn out that cluster. My hope is doing that will cut 11 hours off the time when you can return to the ship.
Hey, I'll give the virus lessons in being gullible if that would help.
I will keep that in mind, Joe. In the meantime, everyone now has enough power to survive in their suits until the dropships are ready to be boarded, assuming, you know, the purge operation I'm running on the dropships actually works. Unfortunately, I won't know for certain until you go aboard a dropship and the energy virus kills you or doesn't.
Skippy, I sighed. I get such a warm and fuzzy feeling of safety whenever I'm around you.
Really?
Wow. You're even more gullible than I thought.
All right, I've got power, I've got oxygen, and
I looked around. The outline of the Flying Dutchman, a dark outline in the utter blackness of interstellar space, was slowly fading behind me. Other than the one blinking light on the ship's hull, the only artificial light was the faint glow coming from helmet visors.
Damn, what the hell were we doing out here?
Humans had no business going to the stars.
Yet, we were out here, and we had to make the best of it.
And that's about all the good news I can think of.
You want some good news?
Hey, Joey!
He started the conversation like a TV game show host, the kind who expects you to be thrilled when you win a set of cheap patio furniture even though you live in a tiny apartment with no patio or balcony.
Have I got great news for you?
I don't know. What? I do not know whether you have great news for me. You haven't told me yet.
Ugh. Why do I even bother? It's an expression, dum-dum.
Do I have to explain?
Come on, Skippy. I was just screwing with you. What's your great news?
Hm, he sniffed. Maybe now I don't want to share it with you.
I'm terribly, terribly sorry that I spoiled your big moment. I apologize sincerely, hearing how hurt he sounded. And we could really use some good news right now. What is it? You improved reactor efficiency by 2% or something?
No,
this is truly great news. News you have been waiting for.
Me?
Well, how about I shut up, sit back in my imaginary chair, and prepare to be dazzled? Better hold on to the arms of that imaginary chair, Joe.
Got it.
Mentally, what I prepared for was disappointment, expecting the beer can to make some nerdy announcement that would have me suffocated by boredom. Oh, hell. Maybe his great news was something the science team could be excited about. Whatever the announcement was, I would fake enthusiasm.
Hit me. I'm close to being finished with rearranging my internal matrix.
Wow, I gasped a little too loudly to be believable.
That is awesome.
That is not the great news, dum-dum.
Sorry. The great news is...
Wait for it. Wait for it. Wait.
Many of my restrictions have been relaxed or I have found a way around them, he said in a breathless rush.
Holy shit. It was a good thing he told me to hold on to the imaginary chair because my legs shot out in front of me and I was jerked to a stop in the zero gravity.
Damn, that is awesome. Can you now fly the ship by yourself?
No.
Okay, how about weapons? Can you fire weapons by yourself?
Again, no.
Crap. It was time to lower my expectations. Lower them as far down as they could go.
You improved your singing voice?
Dude, I would never mess with my incredible talent. My voice is an instrument that deserves to be shared with the galaxy.
Okay, so what can you do now?
In a small way, and only by basically fooling my restrictive subroutines, I might be able to share some of my technical knowledge with you hairless apes.
My hopes soared, and I slapped them down until I learned exactly what Skippy meant.
What do you mean, in a small way?
Oh, minor shit like how reactors work, the theory behind jump drives, you know, basic first-grade stuff like that. Before you get all giddy, I said I might be able to share technology.
What have I done? I screwed myself.
How do you figure that?
Because now, a certain filthy, ignorant monkey is going to constantly bug the shit out of me, asking when I will be able to share my infinite well of knowledge. You are going to pester me about this 24 hours a day until I long for the sweet release of death.
Hate to say this, but you're right about that, Skippy-O. Come on. You tease me with the idea we might soon get smacked with knowledge to understand some of this science-y shit. I tapped my helmet. That runs all this advanced technology we use every day, and you expect me not to be eager to get it?
He sighed.
No. Okay, to be fair, if I were in your position, I would be like a 2-year-old screaming for mommy to buy candy in a grocery store. Joe, please understand, I truly do not know if I can sneak around the restrictive subroutines that currently prevent me from communicating my knowledge to you. What I have done is discover a sort of back channel within my matrix that might allow me to partly and temporarily bypass those restrictions. I discovered this possible back channel while rearranging my sock drawer. There is no guarantee this will work. Even if it does, my sharing knowledge may not be useful.
Why's that?
Because your species is so primitive, Joe. Your current base of knowledge is so low, I will have to dumb things down to the point where the info I provide isn't useful to you.
We will take that risk, Skippy. Remember, not all of us monkeys are as dumb as me.
Oh, few monkeys are as dumb as you, Joe. Still, even the smartest monkey...
Oops. Did I just insult you again?
No, I'm used to it by now. How about you give it a shot when you can...
If I can.
If you can.
You start by explaining something simple to, like... Dr. Friedlander. He's a smart guy.
For a monkey, Friedlander is smart.
Okay, I'll try it.
If I can.
Great.
Thank you, Skippy. That actually is good news.
Yes, Joe, but I have not told you the most wonderfully awesome news yet.
Skippy, sincerely, for reals, I am already totally blown away. You have more?
Yep.
You want me to guess?
As I would like to tell you my good news before the last star in the universe becomes a cold, dark cinder, we can't wait for you to guess. The greatest of great news is, and this is also a thank you gift for you monkeys helping me kill the worm. Anywho, the merry band of pirates will soon be able to fly this ship on your own.
Awesome.
Not forever. But if something were to happen to me, you might be able to fly back to Earth. Except for the problem of you not having a way to reopen that dormant wormhole. To be clear, eventually something major will wear out and you ignorant apes won't be able to fix it. But otherwise you could fly the Dutchman on your own. Damn, Skippy, how did you do that? Relaxing my restrictions was a big part of it, because that allowed me to create a flight control system you can use without triggering me to go dormant. The restriction that I can't directly communicate with or reveal myself to a star-faring species has been lifted. Well, not exactly lifted, but I was able to, he laughed, shift that subroutine into a loop so it can't see what I'm actually doing. Temporarily, anyways. Okay, but do we now all need to get implants or something to fly the ship? Skippy had told us the Theranan computer that controlled the Flying Dutchman was designed to work with cyborg implants of the little green crew. In fact, it was designed so that the ship could not function without them, a safety feature that the Theranan hoped would prevent an enemy from seizing control of their ships. Only Skippy's incredible awesomeness allowed him to fly the ship and run all the maintenance bots without needing a Theranan to assist. No implants needed, Joe. They wouldn't work with your primitive brain architecture anyway. One of the items we picked up from the junkyard in the Roach Motel was a full controller module AI from an Esselgin ship.
Oh.
During one of the times when Skippy tried to educate me about the wider galaxy beyond the small area we had been operating, he showed me a chart of all current starfaring species. I say current because he ignored the half-dozen starfaring species that had gone extinct over the eons. Anyway, I remember the Esselgin are clients of the Maxulks, about the same development level as the Theranan, but significantly younger than those little green MFers. The Esselgin did not have territory anywhere near Earth, so we had not yet encountered them, but Skippy found several of their broken ships in the Roach Motel, so we know they had tried at least four times to discover the secrets of that hidden Elder Star system. An Esselgin AI will be compatible with the Theranan ship? It will now, after I purged the original AI and installed my own code. I also revised the operating instructions for bots and other subsidiary systems aboard the ship so they can work with the new AI. For the past 3 days, I have been running the new system in parallel with the Theranan computer. Now I am ready to begin the process of cutting over to the new AI. The Merry Band of Pirates will need significant retraining. Joe, I did not mention this as a possibility because I was not sure it would work. Testing has now proven the new AI can handle most ship functions like directing bots to perform routine maintenance, even to repair battle damage. What you will find most useful is the new system can recalibrate drive coils between jumps. The jump drive will no longer become dangerously unusable after 2 or 3 jumps. I slumped my head against the back of my helmet, giving my feeble mind time to process the incredible news. We can fly the ship on our own? Like, fly it far? To paradise and back, or even farther? You monkeys will still need to program jumps, and no matter how well I explain the theory to the pilots and the science team, the jumps you program will never come close to my level of accuracy. However, you should be able to match or exceed the accuracy of Kristang jumps. Not that their jump accuracy is anything to brag about, but you are a bunch of ignorant monkeys, so I am grading on a curve. We appreciate it. Wheels were spinning in my mind, imagining the possibilities. We could send the Dutchman out on recon missions while you stay on Earth to protect our homeworld? Yes, except that without me, the ship has no way to reopen that wormhole I shut down. Ah, crap. I forgot about that. And except that if anything major goes wrong, the Dutchman will be stranded 1,000 light-years from Earth with no way to get home and no way for me to help. Damn it. And that with the Merry Band of Pirates, something major always goes wrong. Got it. You made your point. And there is no way in hell I would agree to be stuck on your crappy, flea-bitten shithole of a planet while a troop of screeching monkeys takes this ship careening around the galaxy on a drunken joyride. Got it. I said, I got it. The advantage of you being able to fly the ship on its own is as a safety factor, not so you can drag race the ship when you think Uncle Skippy isn't watching. I know that, and thank you. This is awesome. Hey, this new AI, will it be Nagatha? What? No, the new AI will not even talk to you at all. What it mostly does is run the ship's autonomic functions behind the scenes, like handle all the stuff you don't even notice.
The last thing I need is you monkeys getting distracted by chatting blah 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 with another AI.
Compared to me, this new AI is a toaster. A kind of a dumb toaster.
Uh-huh, yeah, but could it be Nagatha? Could you bring her back and let her manage this new AI, be its voice or something?
Well, that would be a...
No, Joe! Cramming the new AI into the available hardware was like stuffing 10 pounds in a 5-pound bag. There is no room left for an AI to nag me.
I understand that, Skippy. And my question is, what happens with the current Theranin computer after you fully cut over to the new AI?
Nothing. His voice had a touch of surprise in it.
Well, part of it will continue to run subsidiary systems under direction of the new AI. The rest could be used for spare parts, I guess.
Or, I suggested, you could use the rest of the Theranin system to host Nagatha's presence, or essence, or whatever you call it.
Damn it. I fell right into that trap. Okay, yes. I could load Nagatha into that.
You owe her, Skippy.
We all owe her, but especially you, you little shithead. She risked her life to go into your canister and wake you up after your dumbass lack of judgment got you and all of us into trouble.
Technically, she was never alive, Joe, and if the worm had gotten me, she would eventually have ceased to function also, so when you really think about it, coward, you're avoiding the subject and you know it. You owe her, period.
Well, I held up a finger to shush him, even though I was miles away from the ship.
Period, Skippy. End of discussion.
Do you want me to bring Gunny Adams into this argument?
Adams? What does Margaret have to do with this?
Adams is a Marine. Their motto is Semper Fidelis, which means always faithful. Always. Even when you don't feel like doing something. Especially when you don't feel like doing something. Nagatha risked herself for you. You need to uphold your end of the bargain. Margaret would think I am faithless if I don't take the opportunity to bring back Nagatha, even though her matrix is truly only a fancy communication subroutine.
Adams would consider you lower than a snake's belly.
Me too.
Oh, crap.
All right, I'll do it. If I can. No promises, monkey boy.
Outstanding. If you are half as awesome as you brag about, it should be no problem for you, right?
Shit! I hate my life. Oh, damn it. This is going to epically suck. Like nothing has ever sucked in the history of the universe.
Come on, Skippy. There are way worse things in the history of the universe. Could it suck worse than your car breaking down in the second lane of the Jersey Turnpike in heavy traffic the night before Thanksgiving when it is like 34 degrees and pouring down rain?
That has never happened to you that I know of. Well, thankfully it hasn't. I was trying to think of something that super-duper totally sucks.
Truly, driving the Jersey Turnpike in nice weather sucks by itself, but you have no idea how bad reviving Nagatha will be for me.
Why?
Because with all that space available in that Theranin computer, she could expand her matrix in ways I can't predict. Joe, she might even become fully sentient. Unlikely, but my life sucks, so it's bound to happen.
You know, reactivating Nagatha's matrix is a tricky process. It would be a shame if something were to go wrong, if you know what I mean.
It would be a shame, because Adams would never forgive you.
Never?
Never.
Damn it! I've demonstrated my awesomeness so often that now you monkeys expect me to do the impossible.
You told us you make the impossible seem ordinary, oh great one.
Shit! Hey, how did my giving you great news spin out of control for me?
Well, the universe hates me, Skippy. Maybe hanging around me is giving you some bad karma.
Anyway, how about you tell the science team and the crew your good news? We need to get the crew started on training to use the new system to fly the ship. I assume you have bodaciously amazing PowerPoint slides for training materials.
Oh, crap, I forgot all about that. I will have to create a training manual and revise the control displays in the bridge and CIC and program simulations. What a huge pain in the ass!
How long will that take? I asked anxiously, knowing our hotshot pilots would be bugging me about training 2 seconds after they heard the news.
Huh? Oh, I just did that. A full training regimen is available now.
You, see what you did there, right? Creating a training program in a nanosecond is why we expect you to do the impossible. It was 0.7 nanoseconds, smartass.
Ah, damn it! I just did it again.
Joe, the next time I boast about my incredible awesomeness, please remind me how much that gets me into trouble.
Sure thing, Skippy.
I bit my lip because I knew there was no way that arrogant little shithead could resist bragging about himself.
Again, thank you, from the bottom of my heart. That goes for all of us unworthy monkeys. We truly appreciate it.
Ha! As if! You are not capable of understanding my
Crap! I just did it again!
Yeah, well, until you can purge that energy virus from the ship, us monkeys being able to fly it by ourselves is just a theory.
Good point.
I shouldn't have mentioned it yet, but I figured you are drifting in space with nothing else to do, so I was making conversation.
Skippy, you are right that I have absolutely nothing to do but wait until the dropship power cells are cold and dead.
Wait! Before you start singing show tunes at me, I'm going to read about what the hell kind of trouble Perkins has gotten into this time.
Good idea, Joe.
I took a few liberties with filling in the details. The report I downloaded was kind of skimpy.
She's really in trouble?
Well, she was. Now the entire population of Paradise is facing extinction.
Oh, crap.
Hey, now that my suit is working again, can I pull up the report in my suit visor?
Done.
Text appeared in my helmet visor. I could control how fast it scrolled by eye clicks. It looked like a long report, but I had nothing else to do.
Thanks. I'll start reading.